News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.
It is now 6:32, coming up to 6:33, and coming up between now and 7 o'clock, I'll be discussing angel investment, where Ireland's going right and where it's potentially going wrong, with John Phelan of the H-Band Network. InspireFest founder Anne O'Dea will be here to talk about that event, which kicks off next week, and Peter Brown will be here with the latest from the markets. First off, though, quick look at this morning's newspapers, and house prices are everywhere, as you heard there in the news. The Irish Times leads the main paper with a report saying house prices will rise for the next 10 years unless dramatic action is taken. They're citing a report released by Daft. I understand and run lines of Daft's rationale there. He's saying that basically if regulation is kept as it is, house building regulation, then supply will never recover. But anyone who's making 10-year predictions about the Irish economy, I think, suspect is more confident than I am in their predictive powers. Analysis piece in the Irish Independent, Charlie Weston, links the rising number of mortgage applications to potentially rising interest rate environment internationally and in the euro area more particularly, and that effectively he's pointing homebuyers towards more fixed rate deals as a guard against that. Umber Kennedy, meanwhile, also in the Irish Times, reports that Pascal Donoghue said yesterday at the National Economic Dialogue that the economy could have more jobs than we can fill by next year. That would be a fairly remarkable turnaround, given we had 14-15% unemployment not long ago at all. And also a bit of fallout from the first day of that National Economic Dialogue, which is taking place, I think, at Dublin Castle or down the National Convention Centre. Clun Kelpie in the Indo reports that the head of Social Justice Ireland, Sean Healy, accused top civil servant Robert Watt of being aggressive and patronising at the first day of the event. Robert Watt had told Sean Healy to look up data in the CSO at one stage when the two of them were sort of had a bit of back and forth about, I think, sort of outcomes and sort of the quality of life for people in Ireland. That is the papers so far. I'm now joined by my first guest, John Phelan. John is National Director of the Halo Business Angel Network, which won Best Business Angel Award in Europe at a gala dinner this week. First of all, I suppose, first things first, John, what is angel investing? What is an angel investor?
Morning, Dole. An angel investor is somebody who has capital that they want to put to work to invest in early stage companies that have potential to make a return. That's the reality.
It's very much that sort of Dragon's Den type model. If you take out the people sitting in the room quizzing you all at once.
It is very much like that. But I suppose what they will be looking for will be more globally scalable companies in technology areas that they typically understand themselves.
So maybe someone who's made a lot of money in a given sector reinvesting back into that sector.
Yeah, we see a lot of guys who go back into sectors that they understand. So typically they'd know the problems in the sectors that they've come from. So that domain knowledge, that deep domain knowledge, helps them understand where the problem is, what the guys are fixing, how they can help them fix it, and how they can network them into an international network to help them make even more sales. So that's the purpose of it.
And then HBAN.
HBAN is the national umbrella organisation for angels in Ireland. We do a lot of syndicates around the regions. So we have offices in Dublin, Cork, Galway, Waterford, and we're helping the guys up in Belfast as well.
And just in terms of the award that you won this week, that was for the Business Angel Week you guys held, I think, last year, was it?
It was last November, yeah.
Last November. And so what happened there, and, you know, why did that kind of stand out in terms of Europe?
So the rationale for it was that we're constantly asking to get on board new angels. We always need new angels coming in because the amount of deals we do every year, guys come in, they invest, they go off, they look after their companies that they're investing in. And if they do a portfolio approach where they might have 10 companies, that's a lot to look after. So we constantly need to refill that. So we decided the best way to do that will be to go around the country to share with everybody around in each of the different offices that we have what angel investing is all about, gives them some profile of what the companies look like, so the quality of the deal flow that they see. And the example I use is that last year we had 50 companies presenting in one of the forums that we have, and of that 50, 32 got invested in. So 64% hit rate is really, really high. So it's to raise the profile of that and just show people what the quality of deal flow is. So a lot of people who don't understand angel investing would be shy of it, but have some cash, would like to see what it's all about. If they contact us at hband.org, we'll meet them, arrange so they can see the companies, see what the deal flow is like, and see the structures that are in place.
And in terms of that kind of that recruitment drive, essentially, is what it was. How did that do in terms of raising capital?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, we were looking. We thought we'd try and raise about we thought we'd raise about 6 million, and we were aiming to get 27 people on board, 27 new active angels. I mean, we had a lot more guys interested there, but we ended up with about 37 angels who have now been on board, and we have well over the 6 million.
And that money then is gone back into the network to be reinvested back into companies.
Correct. And two of the companies that presented there last year have also gotten invested in. So I was talking to the guys down in Rubycoin last week. So Emmett Savage down there, they've now raised it's about 1.5 million from the HBAN network itself. So it's a lot of good stuff going on there.
In terms of the north-south dimension then, you're saying you're involved in Belfast. That gives you, I suppose, a view, an overview of the regimes that are operating on both sides of the border. What are you noticing there in terms of what works and what doesn't work?
I think we were talking earlier about Brexit, and we're saying we don't really know.
Yeah.
the reality is that there's a lot of good companies coming out of Belfast and the north itself. And we're seeing in particular a lot of the fintech areas, which is coming out of I guess what's going on in the locations up there. And we have a lot of angels coming through there who want to invest in companies down in the Republic. And we have a lot of guys interested from here to invest in companies up north. So the differences will be the different tax regimes. Why are people doing it? Why are they going to invest? But if the quality of the companies coming through is sufficient, then the tax may or may not be an issue, but certainly the quality of the people, the quality of the companies, the quality of the angels, they're all similar.
And
it's all good.
And in terms of that regime, is one working better than the other? Could you say one is kind of smoother, a smoother process for investment?
Well, I think it's pretty well recognised that the EIS or the EIS in the UK and the North is working very well.
That's the tax regime for outside investment, new equity investment.
Correct. So that's working very, very well, very efficient as we understand it in the North and in the UK. The EIS scheme that we have here in Ireland, the function of it is very good. It could probably do with a few tweaks to make it more efficient and faster.
John Phelan, thanks for coming in. It's just coming up to 6:45, and Anne O'D is with me here in studio. Anne is the founder of InspireFest, which is a science and technology conference with a difference, really, and it's on next week. What is happening next week?
Hi, Donald. So the core conference is on Thursday and Friday in the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre. And I suppose the theatre setting is quite appropriate because we try to take science and technology and add some kind of performance element as well. So we bring in the arts and design as well, because now there's so much convergence between all of those areas. And we have incredible speakers, I suppose nearly 60 speakers from all over the world, from Silicon Valley, New York, Washington, UK, Switzerland, Australia, you name it. And we all gather together. There's going to be about 3,000 people over 3 days. This is our third year, and it's all pretty exciting.
In terms of kind of the profile of the speakers then, I mean, who are you looking forward to hearing yourself? I suppose if that's not asking about your favourite child.
You said it. They were all kind of personally handpicked. I kind of curate the event myself, so I'm very excited about seeing them all. I suppose a few of the key people that I'm really excited about is Marcus Weldon is coming over from New Jersey, and he is the president of Nokia Bell Labs. And he's somebody I would have admired for a long, long time. So I'm very excited about seeing him live on stage here in Dublin. Other people, Omar Abash is the head of strategy for Accenture Worldwide. He's a fantastic speaker. I've seen him before. We have Arlen Hamilton, who's coming over from Backstage Capital in San Francisco. And she is, you'd probably gather there's an element of diversity and inclusion in the event. And she is a gay black woman who has set up her second venture fund where she tries to fund, I suppose, underrepresented entrepreneurs. Because I don't know whether you're aware of it, but about 96% 6% of investment in the US of venture investment goes to white straight men. So.
And in Ireland as well. I mean, we look at these figures in the Indo. Sort of the overwhelming weight of capital goes into businesses run by men.
Yeah.
I suppose with very similar backgrounds as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The figures don't differ hugely from country to country. I would say Ireland is probably not the worst, and people like Enterprise Ireland are working very hard to try and get more women funded. And again, but of course, always has to be quality women. Nobody's questioning meritocracy here. That has to remain. But sort of traditionally, women have been put off because they don't see people like themselves getting funded. So they just tend to put their hands up before they ever go and look for funding. So that will be something we're very strong on.
In terms of the event, who then is the audience? Who's it aimed at?
It's an incredible mix. I suppose where we differ is that we're not a web event. It's very much science and technology and the convergence between both. So we'd be looking at augmented reality rather than virtual reality. We'd be looking at artificial intelligence, robotics. But as that lends itself to med tech, to fintech, to ed tech, to blockchain. So we would sort of describe ourselves as looking more at deep science and deep tech. Although then there's a very fun side as well with things like games. So we've the BAFTA award winning Brenda Romero. We've Rihanna Pratchett, who happens to be Terry Pratchett's daughter, but she rewrote the Lara Croft games to make Lara Croft a real human being and a sort of a kick-ass role model as opposed to sort of a cartoon figure. So, you know, they're the kinds of examples. So we go kind of from deep science to STEAM, as they call it, which is science, technology, engineering and maths. But the A is the arts.
Right. And in our, is the audience then primarily an Irish audience, or like, do people come in from?
No,
we
have visitors coming from all over, and that's kind of growing every year. This year, we have a huge contingent from the States, actually, and a lot from the UK, a lot from France and Germany, places like that. And next year, we're hoping to kind of spread out a little bit more too. So we're doing sort of meetups in Asia and Australia. Australia and places like that to really pull that audience back into Dublin.
And it's not all very serious and there's a sort of fringe element.
Yeah, there's a fringe festival around it which very much brings in music, banter. We have, believe it or not, scientists doing comedy, which is always an interesting mix, I think. But they're called Bright Club, so they will be on in the evenings. And incredible music as well, which has a sort of brings in that mix of technology and ethnicity as well. With
you have
Saigudigan.
To do that in terms of putting on a conference, a sort of 3-day event now. You have to sort of do the ancillary as well for people.
I think we probably did it because we wanted to, because it was fun. And also just when you gather that many people internationally in one place, you want to sort of lay on things for them where they can come and chill out and network. And like the best way to network, to be perfectly honest, is to be relaxed, have maybe a glass of wine in your hand, be laughing at a bit of comedy, watching a bit of music. That's where we find some of the best connections are made in a funny way. You know, the day is work and then the evening. And we tend to do early evening so people can get back to their babysitters at 9 or 9:30. We don't do the till 2 o'clock in the morning in the pub because about 60% of our audience would be women, for example. So we try to make it more flexible and more more accessible than your average tech event.
So all kicks off next week. Tickets are on sale at the moment, I think.
We have some remaining. We're absolutely flying at the moment, but inspirefest.com is where you go to find the last of the tickets.
Anna Dee, thanks for coming in and best of luck next week. It's 6:54 and this is News Talk Breakfast Business. Peter Brown of the Institute of Investing and Financial Trading is with me now. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
Markets down a bit this morning.
Yeah, the markets have hit the first bump in the road this year and it's all due to the outlook for economic policy from central bankers. Mario Draghi has a very slight change in tone, but that's all it took. We've had a massive amount of quantitative easing. We've had very, very low interest rates for a long period of time. And we've been expecting at some stage that policy to change. And there was a bit of a hint this week that maybe the quantitative easing is going to end. Maybe we're going to go into an interest rate rising cycle. We got that from Mario Draghi. We got it from Carney in the UK, the governor of the Bank of England. And the market's been summer, which is always very thin, and any bit of news in summer is all over-exaggerated all the time, and the markets took that badly. Euro ramped up against the dollar to 114, and the stock markets took a bit of a 2% correction.
The markets are down because it looks like the European economy is doing better.
Well, the European economy is doing a little bit better, but if you know, interest rates were to rise and the euro were to substantially appreciate, that would kill that dead. You know, in reality, because it's the low euro policy more than anything else that's allowed Europe to recover. So I think this is a little bit of an over-exaggeration in terms of the currency move, but it's definitely going to put the top on stock markets for the summer.
And this is the tightrope, essentially, that the ECB is walking. How do you stop the European economy overheating without killing off the recovery?
Yeah, it's a very, very difficult one. Now, we have to remember that quantitative easing ended in the United States in October 2014, and it took 2 years before they got a rate rise. 2 years. So quantitative easing is going to keep going until December 2017 in Europe. So if anyone's thinking about their mortgage or something like that, it's years before we get any kind of a meaningful rate rise at all. Interest rates are zero in Europe. You could see 0.5% of a rate rise. So the prices that have been charged for fixed rate mortgages do not reflect anything like the reality. The reality is interest rates will stay lower than that for a long, long period of time.
And in terms of currencies then, you're looking at sort of the euro-dollar volatility. The sterling has been gaining this week. People kind of heading into the summer, businesses that export into the UK in particular, have been hit by sort of volatility for a year now, over a year now, around sterling. What's the outlook for them for the next couple of months?
Yeah, we're still hanging in under 90. We're about 87 at the moment. And the reason is sterling is quite strong itself. And, you know, the UK is on the same sort of path. They've got very low interest rates as well. They've got some rampant inflation because they've had their currency very low. So that kind of wraps up inflation. And so they're looking like an interest rate rising cycle as well. So euro sterling outlook looks like it's going to stay in and around the 84, 88 level.
For quite a period of time.
Yeah, so they're moving in steps, so we're not seeing a dramatic increase of the euro over sterling, which is good.
And in terms of the outlook then, the markets go into a lull, or is this kind of volatility in there now?
There's a fantastic stat that if you sold your stock portfolio in May, bought it back in October, and have done that, and it works about 98% of the time. It's absolutely an incredible stat. So we are in that lull. We might get a correction of 5%, maybe even 10% in this stock market. Nothing dramatic. It will bounce back very fast, but I think we've reached a top for the summer.
Peter Brown, thanks for coming in. The time is now just coming up towards 6:58. You're listening to News Talk Breakfast Business.
News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.